Hey everybody, what's going on?
Yep,
it's Sunday. It's the Sunday before Memorial Day.
Yeah, we gotta go out tonight.
We're going out tonight. So I'm going to tell everybody, like, right now, we're talking about The Godfather today because we watched it last night. But, yo, that thing is, like, 3 hours. I was going to watch part one and part two last night, but we didn't start until 7:30 or 8. So by the time it was over, I was, like, too sleepy to, like, stay up and watch the other one. So probably tomorrow we'll have to do a sidetrack show because we won't have time to, like, watch the movie before the show tomorrow. But we'll get around to it, I promise.
It's 3 hours, but it doesn't feel like 3 hours.
It really does.
It goes by fast.
It really does.
Got a really good edit.
Yeah, I mean, big time.
Yeah.
This, I mean, okay.
It's a classic flick.
I mean, yeah, that's the thing about it. Is there really anything? I mean, obviously, we're going to talk about it. But it's like, is there really anything that we can say about it that hasn't been said before? Because I kind of feel like this... What does this have? This has one of the highest, like, Rotten Tomato scores I've ever seen of any film ever. I think it's like 99%. So it was like universal acclaim. And pretty much, I think, you know, even the, what do you call it? Like the National Film Institute or American Film Institute or whatever. This is like their second greatest American film after Citizen Kane. You know what I mean? And I kind of feel like, I don't think everyone's seen it maybe. Like, especially younger people. Now, I had seen it when I was younger. But I hadn't seen it for many years. So in case we didn't mention it, I mean, I know we did mention it, but Louis Hernandez sent us the trilogy, like the Blu-rays. And this is kind of like, well, this is like the 50th anniversary, right? Because this came out in 1972 originally. Yeah. So it's been restored because for a long time, like the negatives were all shitty and everything like that. So they had to like, Coppola had to restore it,
it
several years ago. Yeah, it looks fantastic. I mean... Every frame of this looks gorgeous.
If you haven't seen this, if you're younger and you haven't seen this, you gotta see this. This is this is the gangster version of Apocalypse Now. Now we got a viewer who I'll talk to offline or online sometimes. His name's Zanada. He's over in New Mexico, I think it was, or Nevada. I don't remember, Arizona. Anyway, he had never seen Apocalypse Now. He's even really a big movie fan. I told him to get that Apocalypse Now redo because they re-released that thing and it's got some stuff put back into it. He said that was the best movie he's ever seen. He got addicted to it. He was watching that thing like every day for like fucking a couple weeks. Just loving that movie. This is a movie like that. If it's a movie that you can kind of get immersed in and you kind of see more and more in it every time. Because some shit happens, you don't know it happens until it happens. And you go, oh, that's why that happened. Because stuff is out of order. They're using gangster skills. They'll just kill some dude. You go, why'd they kill that dude? And then later you realize, oh, he was the only one that could have known. So he was the suspect. You know. And then later on they'll say how they knew. Or, you know, they'll talk about what happened, why they killed that guy. It's just a good flick, man. A lot of detail. A lot of attention to detail. Tarantino wishes he made this movie. A lot of shit Tarantino does. He's kind of aping this. Kind of like a ghetto version of this. This is fucking classy shit. This is a good gangster movie.
It's classy shit.
Yeah.
Thank you, Zach. Fun fact, today is the birthday of the series cinematographer, Gordon Willis. Right. And can we all take a minute to appreciate how gorgeous these films are?
Yeah.
They really, really are. I particularly love, like, the contrast between the sort of, like, interior scenes, like the very iconic, like, first scene where everyone's coming in, like, asking the Godfather, like, for favors and stuff, and then contrasted with, like, the real bright sunlit, like, wedding scenes. But yeah, they really, really did. I mean, it's a beautiful looking thing. And I think they did that. I kind of feel like I read somewhere that he was trying to make everything look blocked like a painting, kind of. You know what I mean? Which you can kind of really see when you watch the movie. Cat Guy says, best scenes, just about everyone.
Yeah,
I had forgotten how...
There is no dull scenes.
No, I mean, it just moves along. And this movie covers 10 years in 3 hours.
Yeah, in the 40s. 40s, I think, maybe early 50s.
It's 1945 to 1955 is what the time span is.
The general story is Marlon Brando plays the Godfather, and they kind of establish his character and what he's all about. He's kind of like the local justice outside of them, outside of the law, you know. If like, the law fails you, you can go to him and he'll... You know, fuck some people up because of what they did to your daughter, that kind of stuff. And they show some gangster shit happen, you know, him fucking showing his top dog or whatever. And then the main gist of the movie is that these five gangster families, mafia families around New York and New Jersey, the New York area, offer Don Corleone this deal. They want him to get involved in drug trafficking. And he says, no, thank you, I don't want to do it. And because he said no, they put out a hit on him. They tried to kill him, but he survives the hit. And then while he's wounded, his sons are trying to retaliate against the hit and keep their mafia empire together. And it goes sideways many times. And they're at war for years against these other families. And then finally, the good son out of them becomes the Don, and how he does shit, and then he kind of wins the war in the end, and fucking establishes fucking. It ends with him fucking establishing order within his own family, and then it sets it up for the sequel. It's a good movie. Good movie.
Now specifically, they have Don Corleone. Well, you know, they put a hit out on him. Because at the whole meeting that they had, where he was just like, yeah, I don't want to do the drug trafficking, Sonny, played by James Caan, speaks up and is kind of... So he kind of like... I guess him speaking up, which the Don is like mad about, says to the other gangsters, it's like, oh, probably that son would be open to doing the drug trafficking, so we need to get the Don out of the way
so that
we can get him in charge and shit like that. But the thing about it, I mean, the theme of the whole entire movie, I mean, there's a lot of other stuff going on, obviously. There's, like, tons of characters and tons of, like, backstabbing and tons of all kind of stuff going on.
It's like a miniseries almost.
It is, but it's really well-controlled. Like, it really does... I was watching, like, one... kind of breakdown of it earlier, and they said, you know, it's every cause has an effect, like even if it doesn't happen until like years later, and you're just like, oh, that's what that was setting up, you know what I mean? So it's like really great the way they do that. But the interesting thing about it, I mean, sort of the through line of the whole thing is Michael, the good son, played by Al Pacino, who's fucking great in this.
A very young Al Pacino.
Yeah, he was not completely unknown, but he was pretty unknown around this time, or like not, you know, obviously not the iconic star that he would become. Really, it was kind of like this film that sort of like set him off into like superstar,
especially in the gangster area. The tough guy. This sends him down the tough guy path, even though he's a little guy.
That's why the studio didn't want him.
Yeah.
One, because he was unknown. And two, because they said, well, he's so short.
Yeah. I think he's, what, 5'4"?
They actually did, like, say that. Yeah. They didn't want him.
It works, though, because those dudes in real life were short. A lot of those fucking gangster guys are short. They weren't tall guys.
Yeah.
So it did. I think it worked. I think it worked good. There was differences in them, too. That shit wasn't done with brawn. They had soldier class and officer class, thinkers and people that had money. It wasn't a universal type. One size fits all, the gangster world, you know. It was three. What I liked about it is that the story is about three sons, two Italian ones and an adopted Irish American one. It's Sonny, Tom, and he's the consigliere. He's like their lawyer. They had him educated as a lawyer. And then, what was his name again?
Michael.
Michael. Sonny's kind of just like regular Italian Goomba kind of fucking hothead. But He's a good guy. He's just a fucking hothead. Tom is too laid back, too chilled out, but real cerebral. And what's the guy's name again?
Fucking Michael.
Michael is, he's not involved in any gangster shit. All right, he was
like a war hero. He was a Marine.
He was a war hero.
And he didn't want anything to do with it.
He was a Marine officer. He was a captain. So he had already had command skills. And he had some military understanding. Because of the hit on his dad, he decides to get in the game. And he rises to the top of the three. Tom couldn't serve because he was adopted and he wasn't Italian, but he was high up in there. Sonny was just too hot-headed. He got killed.
He was too impulsive.
Too impulsive. He didn't think things through. So, you know, Al Pacino was the one that fucking rose to the top and he became, in the end.
Because he was very calm and calculated.
And cold.
Yeah, well, and you could kind of see that, like, from the beginning, even when he was, like, still the good guy, and he's still, like, I don't really want to get involved, that's just my family, it's not me, but as circumstances went on, like over the years, he ended up being, you know, the one that was, I guess, because in that way he was like the he was sort of like the most similar to his father, even though his father wasn't real into like just putting out hits on people. And so he was much more family based, much more honor based, where it seemed like Michael was much more, I don't want to say like selfish, but he was just more power hungry for the sake of power, where I feel like Vito Corleone was not.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Michael kind of really got into it when his dad got killed, and then he decides he wants to avenge him personally. So they set up with this mission where
his dad got shot. He didn't die.
He didn't die later. That's right. He was going to avenge the shooting, and they have a big scene where they sneak a gun into the bathroom at a restaurant where they're going to meet up. And he meets with a bad cop. And what was the name of that other gangster?
Salazzo.
I think his name was Salazzo. And that's the guy played by Salazzo was really good. I don't know the name of that actor. Because I'm fluent in Portuguese, they had a scene where he goes, he excuses himself in front of the cop. He goes, "Look, we're going to talk in Italian." And they start talking, and Salazzo, I think is what his name was, tells him, he says, "Look, I had the utmost," he says it in Italian, but there's no subtitles. He says, "I had the utmost respect for Don Corleone, but let's be honest, his thinking is old-fashioned." And then he said, "I'm not, I don't remember the exact order." He says, "I'm not doing this by my own will. They're making me do this. All right? Fucking, I'm the hunted one." And he goes, "If we can get this behind us and you join up with me, later on we can avenge your father's assassination attempt." And that's not in there. The subtitles weren't there, but I was like, okay. So, but Michael doesn't really believe him, I guess, and kills him anyway later on. But maybe Michael was like, "Oh, so you're going to betray? You're going to betray the guys telling you to do this? I can't trust you either." That might have been that also. Might have been the rationale.
Well, yeah, because I mean, if somebody's going to rat on that person, and tell you some shit, then if they come over to your side, then they might rat on you as well. So it's probably not a good.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's not a good kind of person to have around.
Then later on, you find out. In this big meeting when Don Corleone recovers, the meeting between the five families, if Michael's there, he watches the whole thing happen. Turns out it was the fucking head of the whole Don's that did it. The organization ordered that hit. It wasn't that Salazzo guy. So he was telling the truth. They made him do it. But, that was a good touch. So really, what I'm trying to say is in the movie, there aren't any really good guys or bad guys. It's all guys just flipping and flopping depending on whatever the power dynamics were at the time. They're just trying to survive, all of them, in this intertwined mess of fucking leverage. A lot of leverage on each other, and orders and rank hierarchies and stuff. It's a good flick.
Thank you again, Zach. He's the one, the cinematographer, who started that dim, contrasty lighting trend in 70s movies, basically. And that look appeals to me so much, I don't know why. He also shot Clute, who he's still trying to get us to talk about. We will, I promise, like one of these days. But the thing about, the thing about The Godfather, I was watching this documentary earlier about like the making of this. And this movie, it's amazing. Because you know how sometimes you hear about movies and it's just like, oh my god, it was like such a clusterfuck, like behind the scenes, and then when it comes out, it's like, obviously it was a clusterfuck. This was like a massive fucking clusterfuck, and yet it came out like as one of the most brilliant. I mean, everything about this was like a fucking hassle. It's like I think they didn't even want Francis Ford Coppola at the time. He was known, but not like Francis Ford Coppola, you know what I mean? And none of the actors that Francis Ford Coppola wanted, the studio didn't want them. Like I said, they didn't want Al Pacino. They wanted somebody more known. They wanted like Ryan O'Neal or somebody like that because he'd just been in Love Story. And they absolutely did not want, Marlon Brando because one, at this point in his career, he was kind of a little bit of a has-been. And two, he was notoriously difficult to work with. So they didn't really want him to be in it, but Francis Ford Coppola, insisted, you know what I mean? And the thing about it, too, was that I feel like Coppola was really adamant, and he co-wrote the screenplay with Mario Puzo, who wrote the original novel, and they were adamant that they really wanted all Italian-American actors, and, you know, obviously the producer kind of wanted an Italian-American director as well, like, to make it as authentic as possible. But the first thing that producers wanted to do, because the novel, which I think I read, but it was, like, a really long time ago, the novel was, like, a massive, massive, massive success. Mario Puzo, interestingly, before he wrote this book, I guess a book that he had written previously, I can't remember what it's called, but it had, I think, the Vito Corleone character in there, like, as a, like, a little side character. And he thought that it was an interesting enough character that he could write a whole novel about it, but he knew absolutely jack shit about the mob. So he, like, went out to Vegas, and he hung out at, like, some casinos there that, like, where mob people were, and was, like, kind of talking to people that, like, knew all the stories and shit like that, and wrote the thing about that, and it was, like, a huge fucking success, which was good, because he was broke at the time, and he had all these gambling debts, and he needed some fucking money. So the producers, like, I guess it was Paramount, and Paramount was in big trouble at the time, too. Well, a lot of movie studios were, because everybody was, like, watching TV, and people weren't going to the movies that much anymore. And Paramount had, like, kind of put out some movies, including another gangster movie, that hadn't really done all that well. So, like, nobody cares about gangster movies. Like, we don't really want to make another one, necessarily. But because the book was so successful, they're like, oh, okay, maybe. So initially, they wanted something that they could make for, this is hilarious, they wanted to make this movie for $2.5 million and just make it like a cheap kind of violent shoot 'em up type thing. They wanted to transpose the action to the modern day, because it's cheaper to shoot than a period piece. So they wanted to set it in modern day Kansas City. Instead of, like, in the book, where it's 1945 to 1955. But when they brought Coppola on, he was like, absolutely not. We have to do it exactly like it is in the book. And we have to shoot it in New York City, at which point, like, the producers were like, nah, because that's very expensive and very difficult, you know what I mean? Because, you know...
Traffic.
Because of the traffic and everything. Yeah. It's like a nightmare.
And then you gotta clear out the scene of anything modern.
And another thing, too, is that they wanted to shoot as much in Little Italy as they could in New York City. And ironically, is this... I don't know if this is irony, but the mob actually controlled a lot of Little Italy at the time and did not want them filming the movie there, because there was, like, this whole thing about, like, the Italian-American, like, civil rights thing, where they were, it was actually, again, ironically, like, run by a mob guy who said he wasn't a mob guy, but he was. And they were like, they protested a lot of, they're like, look, we're tired of, like, all these movies coming out and making us all look like gangsters and, like, the stereotypes and everything. It had, like, a lot of members, like 800,000 people or something like that. And so they were basically like, we don't want, like, another mob film coming out. And the producer of the movie, I can't remember what his name was. I saw, like, an interview with him earlier, but he's like, he had to actually go and meet with, like, mob bosses. Mm-hmm. And say, like, they, and, like, he had to give them the script, and they had to, like,
in other words,
he had to
charm them.
Yeah, and basically, and they, the weird thing about it was, like, he's like, I took the script, and it was, like, 120 pages or something like that. And he's like, so I take it to the guy, and the guy's, like, looking at it, and he's like, oh, like, he obviously was too lazy to, like, read the whole thing. And he was like, well, they wanted him to take out the word mafia.
Yeah.
And they're like, weirdly, the word mafia only appeared in the script, like, one time, maybe twice. Yeah. So they're like, okay, fine, whatever, we'll take that out. And he's like, and you have to take out anywhere where it says Cosa Nostra.
Yeah.
And they're like, it didn't even say that in there. So they're just like, you're done. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's funny because there was, like, shit going on. So, like I said, the mob absolutely did not want to make this. They were doing, like, shakedowns on all the kind of, like, shop owners in Little Italy. Like, they're like, we don't want the people filming here. And they were, like, doing this big crackdown. But ironically, like, after the movie came out, the fucking mobsters loved it.
Of course.
And they said, like, all the guys, like, that were working FBI, like, undercover, like, with the mob and everything, they said after that movie came out, like, all the mobsters started acting like the mobsters in the movie.
Yeah.
Which I thought was, like...
They're all emulating those guys.
It was, like, so funny. Yeah. But, like, even in the middle of when they were shooting this, like, they were literally shooting this, like, four blocks away when the guy that was the, like, the mobster that was the head of the Italian, like, civil rights thing was, like, gunned down.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, four blocks away from literally, like, where they were shooting this.
Yeah.
So it's, like, fucking crazy. So there was, an actual, like, mafia war going on just a few streets away from where they were filming this at the same time. But I just thought that was so funny that, like, the mob was so dead set against, we don't want, you know, and they would do shit like, like, a couple of, like, the producer's wife, I think, she said, you know, we came out and, like, they'd shoot out, like, the windows of their cars and shit like that. They would do shit like that.
Yeah, well, there are people like any other people.
Bomb threats.
There are people like any other people, and people like status, and to them, that made them feel good and increased their status, that they had a place to, you know, when they saw that movie. You know, they kind of created it created a heritage for them, something to live up to. It's funny that, you know, like, one of the greatest fucking gangsters of all time has been John Gotti. And he talked his way into the fucking mob. He wasn't a mobster. He was just a tall, good-looking guy who knew everything about the mob and liked him and started hanging out in bars where the mob hung out in. And he talked his way into a position of a fucking don. But according to people that were around at that time, they said he was like JFK. He would show up and make them feel important. You know, and... Then over a period of a few years, telling guys, you know, what they should do and what they shouldn't do, and then the next thing you know, he's in charge. Because that's what happens in the natural order of human beings, you know? Talked his way into the mob.
Yeah. Slasher Fred has a fun fact, which I'm glad you reminded me, because I probably would have forgotten to mention this, but the scene with the christening, like, where they're christening the baby... Like, when Michael Corleone's plan is going on, where he's, like, shooting all the other, like, spoiler alert, when he's, like, taking out all the other mob bosses or whatever, that baby was Sofia Coppola. And you know what? I feel like I knew this at some point, but then forgot about it. Talia Shire, who plays Connie in this, who's, like, the sister of Michael and them, that's Francis Ford Coppola's sister in real life. I had forgotten that Talia Shire was Francis Ford Coppola's sister. Well, because he puts his family members into a lot. Like, not usually, like, in big main roles or anything like that, but a lot of the extras and stuff like that. And the funny thing about it, the guy that plays Luca Brasi in this, he was an actual mafia hitman.
Was he?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, he looks smart.
Yeah. They said it was hysterical because, well, an enforcer, that's what they call him. They said it was hilarious because... they said he looks great, and they're like, yeah, he'd be perfect for this, because they didn't cast that part until I think after they'd already started shooting the film. And he turned up, and they said, so he's like a hitman, and they said he turned up on the set and he was so fucking nervous about being in the movie. They said, you know the scene at the beginning at the wedding where he was sitting there like reciting like what he was gonna say like to Vito? They're like, that was just him rehearsing, and they just thought it was funny, so they left it in the movie. Because it was like, they said, that's like what his character would be like, because he's like really nervous about like meeting. But they said that was actually him like repeating his lines over and over, so I thought that was like kind of cute. But they said that was so funny that he'd like probably killed people for a living and yet was terrified of being in a movie.
That character from the book is pretty, his backstory is fucking pretty wild too. Backstory that he was basically the devil, he was fucking bad. He had some Irish girlfriend that he'd had is in this fucking really horrible relationship with, and got her pregnant. When that baby was born, he took that baby from her and threw it alive into the furnace, and I think she killed herself after that. And then he kind of went on a suicidal rage and tried to get into fights and tried to get people to kill him for fucking months, and a young Don Corleone fucking saved him from himself basically and turned him into a torpedo. But that's a good backstory.
It is, they don't really... like I said, I don't remember a lot from the book. I feel like there was a lot of stuff... I remember the book being good. Yeah. But the thing about it is that I think the movie kept just, like, exactly what needed to be kept from the book and took out, like, all the extraneous stuff. Because I remember that there was a lot of, like, extraneous, like, stuff going on in the book that probably didn't need to be in the movie.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's been a long time since I read it. But I do remember there was a lot of stuff going on in there that... Wasn't there... It was kind of smutty, wasn't it?
What's that? The book?
The book. I remember the book had, like, was kind of smutty. Weren't they talking about, like one chick's, like, loose vagina or something?
Yeah, it's been a long time. I was a teenager.
I seem to remember something like that. So I was like, okay. in this book about mafia. But, like I said, I was probably, like, a teenager, like, in my 20s when I read it. So I don't remember. But I just remember there being, like, a lot... more stuff in there than was in the movie. But in the movie, like, even though it's, I think that, I don't know, like, we watched it last night. It's 2 hours and 55 minutes. But then I see other people talking about how it's like 2.5 hours. But no, I mean, it's 2 hours and 55 minutes. But like I said, it doesn't really seem that long.
No, it goes by fast.
It goes by fast because it just like moves. And it's not, it doesn't have to over-explain anything. Like I said, it jumps ahead in time, but it doesn't like handhold you about it. It's just kind of like, this is what we're doing now. And they just kind of like keeps moving along and it kind of trusts the audience to know what's going on.
Yeah, there aren't any dead spots in the movie.
No, absolutely not.
It just keeps on moving.
Yeah. And as I said, that's, you know, yeah, there's a lot of other stuff going on and there's a lot of characters and there's a lot of like grudges and shit like that that you have to keep up with, but it remains like pretty focused on Michael's story. Like, you know what I mean? Like him sort of going from I don't want to get involved in this to being like the head of everything, like over a 10-year period. And so I think it's good that that's kind of like the fulcrum that the story, you know, kind of coalesces around, I suppose.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's that. I was going to say something else too, but I forgot what it was. Oh, yeah. So the thing about it was that Al Pacino, this was nominated for like a fuck ton of Oscars that year and for a long time. Well, this was the top grossing movie in 1972. There was fucking lines around the block to see it. People were seeing it multiple times. It was like a massive cultural, you know, phenomenon pretty much. And for a long time, I think it was the highest grossing movie ever. I don't remember what knocked it off the perch, but it was like the highest grossing movie for a really long time. But it was nominated for a shit ton of Oscars. It won, ended up winning 3, including Best Picture. Al Pacino was mad because, and I think he didn't show up to the Oscars that year because of it, because he was just nominated for Best Supporting Actor, even though ostensibly he's the main character.
I think he is, yeah.
I mean, he's kind of the main character.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how he saw it, because I think that Marlon Brando was nominated for Best Actor.
He's been, but he was more of a supporting character. Really.
But yeah, but yeah. I think he wasn't in it as much because like it wasn't really that far into the movie before he got shot, and then he was kind of like he didn't die until later, but
he's in the hospital.
He was
most
in the hospital most of the time, just kind of like laying there. So I kind of feel like Al Pacino probably had a legit beef.
Yeah,
because he's like, hey, I'm kind of the main character.
Yeah,
when you're talking about The Godfather, you're not necessarily talking about, even though everybody calls Vito Corleone's Godfather.
Yeah.
You're kind of talking about Michael as well, like his sort of like going up the ranks.
Yeah. They were both the Godfather.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. So I can see why Al Pacino was mad, because he's like, well, I'm, you know, he's the main character. But yeah, I think the three of them, I think James Caan was maybe nominated. But yeah, this got a fucked in a nomination. I'm surprised it only won 3. Yeah. But, you know. Thank you again, Zach. Why did I say Zach?
I don't know.
I don't want the fuck. I was trying to say like 2 words at once, I think. I recall reading at one point they wanted Mermaid Man from SpongeBob himself. Ernest Borgnine, that's right. Yeah, when it came down to it, it was Marlon Brando was who Coppola wanted, and the studio wanted Ernest Borgnine to be the Godfather, which I think he would have done all right, I think. But I think George C. Scott was considered, but like I said, they really, really seemed like, and Coppola in particular, really seemed like he wanted Italian-American actors instead of having...
Right.
So, you know, you might have had a thing with, like, like you had with Firestarter with, like, George C. Scott being, like, a Native American. But yeah, so they did, and you know, it was nice they had a director and stuff like that, and they kind of like filmed it in most of the locations, in real locations, where the shit would have been taken place. And the scene where they have, where they kind of show, you know, all the mafia war, like with all the newspapers and stuff, like with all the photos, a lot of those were real, like, photos of mob hits. And do you know who edited that or put that together? George Lucas.
Okay.
George Lucas put that together. Oh, and I wanted to say, too, the very famous horse head scene, because you said, yeah, that looks like a real horse head.
It is a real horse
head. It is a real horse head.
Yeah, they got that from the slaughterhouse.
They got it from a dog food factory.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it was a horse they were going to kill anyway, sadly. Yeah. But, yeah.
Although a lot of times they die or they're just euthanized, shit like that. They go to the dog food factory.
I mean, that dude must be like a real heavy sleeper. I don't know if he, I don't know if he could put a bloody horse head in my bed without me waking up and being like, "The fuck are you doing?"
Right.
I kind of feel. Well,
I was looking at that head was a little bit smaller than the head on that thoroughbred. You know what I mean? It was not the same horse.
Obviously, it wasn't the same horse. They're not going to like kill that like $600,000.
Right. Yeah, it wasn't a nag, but it wasn't. It wasn't a fucking top end $60,000 thoroughbred either.
Yeah. Well, they're like it's close enough. But, the cabbie from Escape from New York is Vito. LOL.
Yeah.
Yeah, or the guy with the goat head from The Devil's Reign.
We saw him in The Devil's Reign, and he played he's a real good villain. Ernest Borgnine can bring it when it comes to being
now,
a villain.
Now, some people pointed out, because I said he must have played a villain. He was in so many fucking movies. Yeah. He must have played a villain at some other movie, and a bunch of people pointed out that he had been in, what's that movie called? Bad Day at Black Rock, I think it's called. He's a villain in that as well.
Yeah.
But I kind of feel like most of the time, he played kind of more affable, avuncular sort of characters. So it's nice to see him play a bad guy. It would have been interesting... I don't know. I mean, Ernest Borgnine might have been good in it, but I don't know if it would have had the same gravitas.
Like I said,
the producers didn't...
Brando made this movie official.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
The producers didn't want Brando, like I said, because at this point, I mean, it's, this was before Apocalypse Now and Last Tango in Paris and all that, and so this movie, the success of this movie actually kind of... made Marlon Brando like hot again, you know what I mean, like to be in movies, because prior to this he was getting like a lot of shitty he was on his kind of downward trend. Like I said, he had a reputation for being kind of difficult to work with,
so
the studios didn't really want him to get it because they thought he was a pain in the ass. And what Francis Ford Coppola, he wanted him so bad that the producers were like, well, maybe if you do a screen test. And Coppola's like, I can't ask Marlon Brando
to do a screen test.
So what he did was he snuck over, well, he didn't sneak over to, but he came over to Marlon Brando's house and he's like, hey, do you mind if I like film you doing this scene? It's like, I need to test some equipment. So he got him to do that, to do like the part, and then like he slipped that tape like into the middle of like all the other ones, like the producers. Brando saw through that. Well, I'm sure
Brando
he did.
Saw through that.
But I'm sure he appreciated, well, like that he didn't want to, like, insult me by saying, hey. So he's like, so he just went along with the ruse, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But they kind of like, so the producer was like, he'll be
what
great.
What it was is Brando says, like, they don't want to ask you for a screen test, one, because they know that it's beneath me, and two, if a part doesn't come from it, they're not fucking slighting me. I'm not being played.
Yeah.
So they gave him an out and an in simultaneously.
So that was like a good way to play.
Brando wasn't stupid. He knew. He's smart. He's crazy, but he knew how they worked.
Yeah, but crazy and smart are not mutually exclusive.
No. He's smart and crazy.
In fact, a lot of smart people are crazy.
Yeah,
because they're smart.
You could be talking to Brando. You could be talking to Brando without warning the motherfucker. Just kiss you on the lips, and you're a man. You're a man, and he kiss you on the lips, and he hold you. I love you. I love you too, Brando. Because that's all. What are you going to say? That's the only thing you're going to say. I love you too.
Oh, shit.
You don't have a choice.
Not really.
Not at that point.
Stardog78 said, I just had a funny thought. Imagine Keanu Reeves as Vito Corleone. Oh, my God.
Terrible.
Yeah, I don't think that would have worked.
I don't even think George C. Scott would have been right for it. Too boisterous. Or something about that.
I mean, he would have been good in it, too, because he always plays, like, a good villain. But, like I said, he's not Italian, and I don't know. I really kind of, like, respect the commitment to, like, verisimilitude that they did. It's like, yes, we want it to be a period piece. We want it to be set in New York City, in Little Italy. We want as many Italian-American actors. And, in fact, they had real mob guys in the movie because they had to get mob permission to film at a lot of those locations. So a lot of the mob guys were kind of like, well, hey, can we be in the movie? Or, like, can we be extras? And they're like, sure, why not? So they let... So a lot of the people at the... at the wedding scene and a lot of people in the backgrounds, those are actually people, high and low level, like mob guys, and wanted to be in the movie. And it's funny because when the movie came out, the mob guys got mad because they didn't get invited to like the big premieres and stuff, because they're like, well, they'd been, having the mafia war and like shooting each other up and everything. So obviously they're like, well, we don't really want to have them at the premiere because who knows what the fuck is going to happen. So they got upset because they thought they were going to get free tickets and everything. So they had to like do a premiere just for the mob guys so they could just like go see the movie themselves. Yeah.
Somebody mentioned it, that this was Saddam Hussein's favorite movie. It was. He liked this movie and the entire series. Saddam Hussein used the Godfather series, Joseph Stalin, and the Third Reich as his blueprints on how to get power. That's those are his role models. Adolf Hitler, fucking Joseph Stalin, and the Corleones. Yeah, he said they used them as fucking training manuals.
The thing about it, though, is that this is a lot of people's favorite movie.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if that really has much of... just saying that this is Saddam Hussein's favorite movie, I was like...
Yeah. No, it's just an interesting... It's just it an is, interesting yeah. thing. Because,
I think it would be more interesting if you said Saddam Hussein's favorite movie was, like, some... I don't know, like, Chairman of the Board with Carrot yeah. Top or something like that. Well, like, I'd be like, well, that's fascinating.
If you look at how Saddam came to power, he used elements of all those... All three yeah. of those. Yeah. There was something to learn from this movie. And the books and the series. You know, Saddam lived in a time before, you know, fucking the television miniseries. Like, what was the one with the other one, he probably would have liked Breaking Bad and what was that other one? Fucking the Mafia in there.
The Sopranos.
Sopranos. He probably would have liked that too. Because, you know, this is very long form storytelling for the day. 3 hours? That's a long fucking movie. For, you know, back in the day, you know, they didn't have these big long fucking miniseries like you have now where they can fucking go into a subject in depth. So, you know, it was a lower information world back then. But still, this movie stands the test of time. It's
well, and again, I think the producers were expecting something more like a like an action movie.
Yeah.
And when they saw like the first scenes that had been shot were like the opening scenes with all the people coming in, like the Undertaker coming in and like asking Vito, you know, asking the Don about, you know, I want some justice for my daughter. She got, you know, raped by these two guys or whatever. And it's like this low light, dark kind of scene that's really, really long. And I think the producers were like, this looks like an art movie, dude. It's like, yeah. I thought we were going to do like a violent kind of... So he added a couple like violent scenes, like that one scene with Talia Shire, like pregnant mm-hmm. Connie, like with her husband, like beating the crap out of her, like throwing all, like breaking all the dishes and stuff. They added that because they're like, look, there's an action scene. Okay, you happy now? Yeah. Shut up. But you know, and a lot of people get shot up in this. Like Sonny yeah. gets shot up, and like fucking, you know, Vito gets shot up. It's, you know, there's a lot of action kind of scenes. But they wanted something more like. Originally, they wanted something more like, but I'm sure they shut up like after this movie pretty much saved Paramount Studios because it made all the money and yeah. won all the Oscars. Well, it was nominated for all the Oscars. It only won 3. Jake Adams says Goodfellas is better than Godfather. Yeah, well,
it's not better. It's just a different movie. That's,
yeah, also a good it's kind of different. I mean, Goodfellas is fucking great. They're yeah. both great, but they're different.
Yeah,
they're different.
The time period's different and everything. It's just different. Although I enjoy them both.
Yeah, I do. As
I enjoy
well.
Them both. They're good.
I do as well. Yeah, and so
maybe Casino was good.
Man, no. I love Casino.
Casino was good too.
That was the one I saw in the theater. I don't yeah. think I saw. I obviously didn't see Godfather in the theater because it came out the same year yeah. I was born. But I don't think I saw Goodfellas in the theater. Although I might have. But I definitely saw Casino in the theater.
I saw Goodfellas at the theater at Camp Greaves, Korea on the DMZ. That's where we saw it. And we watched it for like 2 or 3 nights in a row. We kept going back to watch it because it was free. They would just play it for free. And we had a theater. It was a movie theater and everything. And they'd play that fucking thing 2 or 3 times a night. We were going to it fucking 2 or 3 nights in a row to watch that thing. It was good on a military base, just us. You could drink in there and everything. Drinking in the movie theater.
You could drink at our movie theater.
Yeah, you can.
They even have their own bar.
You can. Yeah. We were taking a bottle, though.
Well, yeah, that's true.
You know.
Well, I mean, you could do that now. You just yeah. need a big purse.
Yeah.
What is that bar called at AMC? MacGuffin's.
MacGuffin's. Right. It's too expensive.
It is. It's kind
it's
of expensive.
Like $10 a drink.
And the drinks are kind of, well, that's
weak.
That's yeah. what they, a lot of them are at clubs, yeah. but they are kind of weak. But I can see why, because they don't want people like running around like dude, chimpanzees, fucking, yeah. like while in the movie theater. Happened. Yeah, definitely.
That's
so they're just like,
doing.
Just water it down a little bit, because, yeah. you know. Jake Adams said, I know it's good for authenticity to have actual mafia in the film, but they're mafia. I don't think they would behave. Yeah, I think that's kind of what they were afraid of. Especially because, like I said, 4 blocks over, there was actual like mafia shootings going on, like while this, because this was 1972, there was like a lot of violence going on in New York City, like mob violence. It was all kind of like crazy shit going on. And First Power 100 says, thing is, Marlon Brando isn't even of Italian blood, but knocked the role out of the park. Interestingly, I had forgotten Marlon Brando was only 47 when he shot this. Damn. And I saw some...
He looks a lot older.
Well, I was just going to say, the reason he looks a lot older is because they put a fuck ton of makeup on him.
Oh, okay.
Because I saw, like, a before and after picture. He actually looked pretty good. Like, he looked quite young.
Right.
You know, he looked like he was in his 40s, but he looked good still.
Yeah.
And then they showed, like, the after. So they did actually put a lot of, like, heavy makeup on him.
Yeah.
And I heard, I don't know if this is true or not, but I heard that the reason that some of the scenes with him are so dark in the movie is because they were trying to hide how much makeup was on him, because they wanted to make him look like an old man, even though he was only 47 and didn't really look like an old man. Like, you know what I mean?
This was taking place, of course, in the 40s and 50s. Goodfellas was later, you know, that was like 70s. I think that even went into the 80s, didn't it? The truth of the matter is, you can go back to the 20s with the bootleggers and some of these Italian crime families that were happening even back in the roaring 20s. And not all those guys were Italian in there, and a lot of them were mixed, Italian-Irish mixes, because, you know, racial admixture has been going on in this fucking continent forever, thousands of years. And in the American period, fucking just because of immigration, everybody was kind of mixed. So, but, you know, if you looked at Goodfellas, you know what I mean, it's when you started getting into the 70s and 80s, a lot of people are not going to be pure Italian, because they're going to marry in white people.
Yeah.
You know, fucking, Michael was getting ready to marry a, you know, well, I was calling them white. They're all white. Fucking,
Diane Keaton.
Yeah, getting ready to marry. They would just call them the Irish. You know, the Anglo-American type. Anglo-Irish and Germanic-American type people. You know, you go to Northern Italy, they look like Germans anyway. You know.
Jake says, I like Goodfellas' outsider's perspective on the mafia with Ray Liotta, R.I.P., his Irish character, more so than the overall family-driven plot of The Godfather, but they're both great films.
Yeah,
I kind of feel like a lot of mafia movies, please forgive me, or please correct me if I'm wrong, but I think The Godfather was kind of the first one, the first movie about the mob to show it, like, from inside, and to show it, like, more nuanced. I kind of feel like maybe after it came out, Francis Ford Coppola got a little bit upset that a lot of mob guys really were into it, because he's like, well, I didn't want to make it seem like I was glamorizing it. He's like, I was just trying to show it as realistically as possible while sticking to the book.
Yeah.
And just show them as like nuanced characters, not just
people.
Yeah, just people. Yeah. And like they had reasons for doing what they were doing and stuff like that. And I don't think it glamorizes them at all. You know what I mean? But...
Yeah, there's a misunderstanding about the ethnic aspect of this. There's a misunderstanding that you had to be Italian to be in an Italian crime family. You didn't. You just, in most of those families, you just needed to be Italian or Sicilian to become a made man, which is different. All right, you couldn't be killed if you were a made man without having some kind of a sit down between higher up people. Anybody else was kind of like in the mafia, if that's what you want to call it, but they're like soldiers or employees. They don't have to be Italian blood. It just had to do with who was made and who could become, you know, a head of a family or a don type deal, you know. Then they're going to worry about, you know, are you Italian? And it all kind of goes back to the Moorish occupation of Italy. That's when the kind of Moors occupied Italy for a while, the Italian government had to go underground, all the fucking landowners, the dons, you know, landowners that owned plantations and farms. They became kind of an underground government, and that's where it all started. That underground government survived the Moors and ended up in the more modern era during the era of Mussolini. They're still operating as an underground government, kind of like feudal lords.
But yeah, I think that probably this was the first one that showed the mob maybe from like the inside perspective rather than the outside perspective. Maybe there had been other ones, but I guess this was like the first kind of like blockbuster film to do that. I kind of feel like before, movies about the mob was usually from somebody that was just coming into it or somebody that was like a cop that was like infiltrating it or like fighting against it. This was kind of the first one that showed like the intricacies of what was going on inside and was massively, massively, massively influential. I mean, there was so much mafia stuff that came out, like, after this. Like, this is directly responsible for, like, The Sopranos and stuff like that, and all the gangster movies that came out before. Somebody pointed out, Jake said, yeah, this is a funny trivia about it, too. I love that the cat in the opening of The Godfather was just some cat on the set that just, like, wandered in there. And it looked good in the scene. Best part was Brando didn't even like cats, so it zeroed in on him. Yeah, a cat can tell a person that don't like cats. He's like, I'm gonna go climb on this motherfucker. Yeah. It's like, hey, don't you like cats? Don't you like cats? I'm gonna get your fucking fur.
He also said, Jake's also saying that, yeah, that was kind of like the mafia glass ceiling of whether or not you were Italian or Sicilian.
Yeah.
You know, there, you can only go up so high if you weren't Italian.
Yeah, Zach also pointed out there was actually a controversy where the score, yeah, that's right, the score for this movie was nominated for an Oscar, but when it was discovered that the composer had reused some of his score from, like, another movie, like, on this score, they actually, like, took it out. So, yeah, that was I saw that on the Wikipedia page. But, yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like even if you haven't seen this movie, you've seen this movie. You know what I'm saying? It's just so filtered into, it's just one of those movies like Jaws or something like that, where it's so filtered into the cultural consciousness that I feel like even if it came out way before you were born, or it's like, even if I just feel like because it's been parodied so many times, because it's been so influential on other movies and other TV shows and stuff like that, that it's one of those movies that I kind of feel like everybody needs to see at least once, just if you're, just because it's such an American, like a, like an iconic, like, American cultural artifact.
Yeah, it's a must see. You gotta see it.
Yeah, it's just one of those ones. And I don't say that a lot about a lot of movies, because most movies, you know, even like really, really great ones, you know, yeah, you can see them or not. But I kind of feel like if you have any interest at all in film or in American art or American culture, like pop culture as a whole, then yeah, you definitely need to.
In my opinion, this is the Apocalypse Now of gangster movies. It's at that level. It's the Star Wars of gangster movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, yeah. So, like I said, we are going to do, because Louis very, very nicely gave us all three of them.
Yeah.
Like, in a box set.
There's at least three. There might be four. Is there three?
Well, there's one that's called Coda, which is kind of like, I don't want to say it's like a prequel. It's like a sequel-ish kind of thing. But I think it's called like The Death of Michael Corleone.
Okay.
So it's kind of like an extra thing.
All right.
But yeah, that's on there as well. So we will be getting around to those. But I'm gonna say tomorrow we'll probably live stream at 6 like usual. But it'll probably be a sidetrack show because we're going out tonight, so we won't have time to like watch the second one. So we'll probably watch the second one maybe like Monday night, and then talk about it on Tuesday. But tomorrow we'll probably do like a sidetracks because, you know, like I said, we got to go out in a couple of hours and we won't have time to like watch the movie tonight. Yeah, Jake says it's one of those movies that's a remote dropper. If it's on TV, I stop changing channels. Yeah, it's kind of one of those. Let's see. All right, so I guess we've been going for like almost an hour.
Yeah.
And we should probably like,
you gotta start getting
ready. Have something to eat and like start getting ready and stuff like that. We're gonna head out in a couple of hours, probably. But yeah, thanks everybody for dropping by on this Sunday. Have a good rest of your weekend. Have a good Memorial Day tomorrow if you're celebrating it. Like I said, we'll see you tomorrow at 6 o'clock. We're gonna do a sidetrack show. So we'll see you guys then. Bye.